I want to talk on last week's Torah portion, Korach. The story of Korach is one we've seen played out repeatedly throughout history. The story is thousands of years old and has continued virtually in every generation from the time of Korach onward, and probably before. The truth be known, as I said, condemning Korach, the Lord showed me there's a little Korach in all of us. And he pointed out the places where I behaved in a similar fashion. Oh, Korach is so important to understand and to apply to our walk with the Lord that he has an entire Torah portion dedicated. And he fills the old adage, if you can't be a good example, be a stern warning. Yeshua picked up a little bit on that and said, I'd rather you be cold or hot, but since you're lukewarm, Korach was cold. In many ways, Israel is unique. In many other ways, we are exactly the same as everybody else. From the time Israel left Egypt, we wanted to go back. We were slaves, we were treated brutally, we got set free. Within a few days, we want to go back. It's remarkable. To those of us who were born in America and relatively free, this is astonishing. Why in the name of all that is holy would you want to go back to the place that abused you? But actually, this is an attitude that is often seen among slaves. Slaves will often rather return to slavery than face the rigors of freedom. We consider freedom to be a high ideal, but it is not an easy ideal. Because to be free, you have to stand on your own two feet. You have to actually take responsibility for your own decisions, be they good or bad. You have to learn how to provide and be responsible to provide for your family. Your family has responsibilities. And that word responsibility weighs on people. It's like a stone. Many in the former Soviet Union desired to go back under communism after they were set free from that tyranny. They had no idea how to live as a free man. What do I do? What do I do now? On Tuesdays, I waited in line for meat. On Thursdays, I waited in line for vegetables. What do I do now? There's no lines. Where do I get my food? My toilet paper? My shoes? They were lost. In fact, the rise of socialism in the 1900s took its inspiration from Korach, actually. And the Jewish people were at the forefront of all these various people's movements, these grassroots people's movements. Karl Marx, a Jew, literally wrote the book on socialism. Socialism it's a secular movement. It's utterly devoid of God, and it completely discards the concept of Adonai Yireh, God as our provider, and replaces that invisible deity with the state. And it is the state that becomes the provider of all of our needs, our food, clothing, shelter, health care, etc. Cradle to grave, as it's now called. Socialism also imposes an unrealistic and an unsustainable equality upon humanity. The word equality has been abused now for hundreds of years. All people are created equal. They are created the same. They are created in the same way. The process by which we are birthed is precisely the same for everybody who is alive today. We all have a soul, the breath of God, breathed into us. And therefore, each is to be treated equally under the law. The Torah and the Constitution of the United States, which took its inspiration from God's word, both declare that there is one law for both the native and the stranger in the land, the alien. Specifically, you are not allowed to mistreat a person simply because he's not a citizen. Now, frankly, this whole concept has been lost today. We have two polar opposites, and neither of them are true. One says every right and privilege afforded citizens should be afforded to aliens, legal or illegal. The other side says it's the Constitution of the United States. It's not the Constitution of the world, and therefore aliens have no rights in America. Both of those are false. The Constitution does not allow for the abuse of aliens, legal or illegal, in this country. We're not allowed, for instance, to roam around, find one, and hang him from the yardarm or the lamppost if you're in landlocked Colorado. You're not allowed to do that. There has to be a due process, just like there has to be for you as a citizen. We are not mob rule. There's no vigilante justice because there's never been any vigilante justice. I love it. I've been to Tombstone a dozen times, and I loved one of the tombstones there says, here lies, and I'm old. I can't remember the guy's name. But here lies so-and-so. He claimed he didn't do it. We strung him up. He was right. We were wrong. That's the epitaph on the man's tombstone. And that's what happens with mob rule. There's no trial. There's no cross-examination. There's no revealing of witnesses and motives. You just find somebody and hang them. That's not justice. There are privileges afforded to citizens in this country, just like there were privileges afforded to citizens of Israel. Two specific instances, there are more. If there was a stranger in the land, he was to be treated just like the rest of the Israelites outside the Passover. If he wanted to celebrate Passover in Exodus 12, he has to convert. He has to become part of Israel. In America, only citizens can vote because citizens have a vested interest in this country and its future. If you're not a citizen, that's not necessarily the case. However, although all men are created equal, not all people have equal ability, and that's where socialism fails. Socialism seeks to implement not just an equality of opportunity, but an equality of outcome. Everybody has to have the same standard of living. This is an inaccurate understanding of equality, because not everybody works as hard as everybody else. And the ones who work harder, a farmer who works hard in his field, will reap more crops than one who doesn't. So since there's not an equality of expenditure of energy, there will be an inequality of product reaped. To accomplish this equality of outcome, socialism does a very simple thing. They take from those who have and give to those who do not. It's real simple. It's called the redistribution of wealth. I refer to it as the redistribution of poverty. Because as soon as the wealthy see that their stuff is taken and given to those who are poor, they stop working. Now there's nothing left to take, and everybody is poor. It's been played out hundreds of times. Socialism feeds on discontent. Coveting is not only sanctioned, it's institutionalized. It becomes part of the society. Democracies suffer the same fate as socialist republics. The classic, I'm pretty sure most people here have heard the classic and very sarcastic definition of democracy. Democracy is two wolves and a sheep voting on what's for dinner. Its sarcasm is purposed to show the lunacy of democracy. Under democracies, the majority can vote to take the property of the minority. Germany, circa 1930s. Property of the Jews was confiscated. 1492, the property of the Jews was confiscated. The reason I'm so passionate about this is I'm Jewish, and I don't want people taking my stuff. So, you know, I have a dog in this fight, because we're always the number one on the list of people who get their stuff taken. That's precisely why our founders desire to form a constitutional republic, not just a republic, a constitutional republic rather than a democracy. The Constitution constrains the desires of the majority and will not allow them to abuse minorities. Minorities have rights, and they cannot be taken away simply because a majority of people want them dead. For instance, if a majority of the people in the United States, we hold a vote, and the vast majority of the people, let's say 95% of the people, want to bring back slavery, the Supreme Court will knock down that vote. It will not become law because it is unconstitutional. If 100% of the people wanted to bring back slavery, unconstitutional, they would have to change that document, make an amendment. We are not a democracy. We are not a majority rule. Again, these various movements, these grassroots people's movements, take their inspiration from Korach. As the voice of the people, Korach rebukes Moses and Aaron by appealing to the equality of all people, the same as every socialist movement ever. In Numbers chapter 16, verse 3, Korach is rebuking Moses and Aaron. You take upon yourself too much, for all the congregation is holy, every one of them, and the Lord is in their midst. Little bit of truth, lot of lie. Korach became the voice of the common people, the people's champion in Israel, and he fought against Moses, who was the voice of God and God's champion in Israel. The first failure of Korach's argument to Moses and Aharon is obvious. Moses did not exalt himself. God chose him. It was not Moses who told Israel about God. It was God who told Israel about Moses. God spoke to all of the nation and told them of his choice for Moses to lead them. It wasn't Moses telling the rest of Israel about God Almighty. Second, it was not God who wanted this priestly caste, the tribe of Levi, to be holy and separated from the rest of the nation. He wanted the entire nation to be holy and separate from all the peoples of the earth, and that's why he calls us a nation of priests. We couldn't stand it. God appeared and spoke to the entire nation, and the entire nation freaked. They came to Moses and said, oh, we can't stand it. We can't. Well, if God speaks to us one more word, we'll die. You go. You listen. Come back and put his words in our ears, and we will hear and we will do. It was our choice to have a mediator between us and God. And it was at that moment that the nation of priests now had a separate caste of priests to intercede between God and us. And because Moses was from the tribe of Levi, it was the tribe of Levi that became that the family, the tribe of the priestly caste. If Moses had been from another tribe, it would have been the Benjamite, for instance, the Benjamite priesthood. Since he was Levi, it's the Levitical priesthood. God made an accommodation for us. He granted our request. Now Korach is turning everything around, and in no small degree of irony, Korach is wanting to return to the time when all the people were holy and God is in their midst. That's quite the irony. Predictably, we became disgruntled under this system. Korach's statement that all of Israel was holy, although true, implied an equality of purpose, which is false. His statement also implies that there should be no single leader. Korach, as the voice of the people, wanted to be heard in the decisions that Moses was making. He wanted democracy. He misunderstood. These weren't Moses' decisions. These were the decisions of God. And Moses was simply the mouthpiece that spoke those decisions. Therefore, ultimately, Korach's sin was not against Moses, and it was not against Aaron. Numbers chapter 16, verse 11. Therefore, you and all your company are gathered together against the Lord. Their fight, their primary fight, was not with man, but with God. There's one leader of Israel, God, and he chooses who will serve him and where they will serve him. And if you fight against those choices, you're fighting not against those people, but against the one who chose him or her, God. There's also quite a bit of deceit found in Korach. He's quite transparent. He was obviously the leader of this group of 250 princes in Israel. And the princes, of course, were leaders of various companies of people. And he led the 250 who were in rebellion. And if this rebellion had been successful, Korach would have been the leader of Israel in the wilderness. He was coveting the position of Moses and Aaron. Moses understood this motivation. It was clear to him, as revealed in a question that Moses asked Korach in Numbers chapter 16, verse 9. Is it not enough for you that God has made you a Levi? You also want to be a Kohen? A priest also? What's next? My job? I added that last part. But that's obviously where it's going. Korach's motivation and intent is obvious. He is not a servant of the people. Korach is self-serving. And we've seen this happen, again, thousands of times where people become the voice of the people, then they get in power, and all of a sudden the people are oppressed. They're no longer the voice of the people. They never were. Envious people are always unhappy. They never have enough, even when they get everything they want. Envy is an insatiable spirit. It desires everything. And you can't have everything. Where would you put it? Happiness and joy is a condition that one chooses to live in. It is not a product of the things that you can accumulate. That is a delusion. Boy, if I could just get this new car, I'd be happy. Delusion. It'll pass in a week when the first payment comes. Half the stuff we own owns us. The sin of Korach infected many others. When Moses calls Korach's co-conspirators, Datan and Aviram, their hatred of Moses, they won't even come to talk with him. They won't speak. They send him in their condescension and their anger. They send Moses a message in Numbers 16, verse 13, and it's filled with contempt. Is it not enough that you brought us up out of the land flowing with milk and honey to have us die in the wilderness, but now you would lord it over us? You have not brought us to the land flowing with milk and honey, nor have you given us the inheritance of fields and vineyards. Understand the context of when this has happened. The Lord had already brought us to Israel. We sent in spies. They came back. They said, we are like grasshoppers in the sight of these people. We can't do this. And we would not go in and conquer the land. And the Lord declared that we will die. And so here is the response of Datan and Aviram. You brought us up out of the land flowing with milk and honey. Egypt? The place of our bondage and slavery has now been twisted into some sort of nostalgic land flowing with milk and honey. This is a complete distortion of reality and truth. It is fake news. And it is a false assessment of blame. Egypt is not the land flowing with milk and honey. And the accusation that Moses did not bring us to the promised land is patently false. He did. We would not enter because we were afraid. God was faithful to fulfill his promise to us. We were not faithful to walk and believe in those promises. This was our fault. We wouldn't go in. And we did the same thing that people have always done. We blame our leaders for our own deficits and our own poor decisions. It is classic. It is as much a part of humanity as an earlobe. The sin of Korach and those who followed him is a grave sin indeed. And therefore, the fate of Korach and his followers is unique in all of history. He suffers a fate that no one else has or ever has since suffered. Moses is addressing the nation in this conflict with Korach. And he says in Numbers 16, 29 through 30, if these men die the death of all men, then the Lord has not sent me. But if the Lord brings about an entirely new thing, and the ground opens its mouth and swallows them up with all that is theirs, and they descend alive into Sheol, then you understand that these men have spurned God. What is being described here? It's a reverse rapture. All right? Lekach, a taking away. 1 Corinthians 15 talks about the Lekach, the catching away of the saints. It is the same word in Hebrew that is used to describe what happened to Enoch when God took him and he was not, and also Elijah. When the other prophets come to Elijah's students, they say, do you not know that this very day your master, your rabbi, your teacher will lakach, be taken away, lakach. That's the same word that is used in Greek, harpezio, for the catching away, the sweeping away of the saints. And the fact of the matter is, not all of the saints are dead who experience lakach, the rapture. The dead in Messiah will rise first, and we will not precede them. Then we who are left alive shall be lakach, harpezio, caught up, and so shall we ever be with the Lord in the air. These guys experienced the same thing, but a slightly different direction. They were also taken away, but they went down. One is called a rapture, the other one not so much. Because the word rapture more applies to the feeling of the people who are caught up rather than the actual word, the decent definition of that word. It's more the attitude of the people who are caught up. As always, decisions based on fear will end poorly every time. Precisely why I chose the New Covenant portion for today. God has not given us the spirit of fear, but a sound mind, one that does not panic. The spirit of Korach has possessed many. In the 1950s, communist revolutions that promised equality of wealth were quite in vogue throughout South America and all over Africa, all over Asia. The Soviet Union, as the champion of one and the United States as the champion of the other, fought many proxy wars. Vietnam is probably the most famous. In all these cases, these various coups left millions dead and others destitute. It is so revealing these days when these Antifa people wear T-shirts with Che on the front. It is also rather ironic because they're behaving exactly like he did. The man is responsible for rivers of blood in Cuba. He was Castro's henchman. And he slaughtered men, women, and children with no regard at all. He was a complete sociopath. Him and his guys just roamed the countryside and opened fire with AKs on a million people. Those whom Castro believed were dissidents. Thousands were killed trying to escape East Germany, East Berlin, Romania, Czechoslovakia. You want to know how the people in a country feel about their government? Look at the borders. And look at the troops. And look at which way the guns are pointed. If the guns are pointed out, that country is trying to keep people from coming in. If the guns are pointed in, they're trying to keep their people from escaping horrific conditions. And if you look at the communist countries, the barbed wire fences had the barbed wire at the top going in. They weren't concerned, nobody wanted to get into Czechoslovakia in the 50s. People didn't risk their lives to sneak into Russia in the 1950s. Look at our situation today. People walk thousands of miles to sneak into our concentration camps. Sarcasm purposed. The body of Messiah is also not immune. Over the course of my tenure as rabbi here over, I don't know, it's probably about 34 years. I have counseled a score of congregations when one in their midst has risen up in the spirit of Korach. I am blessed that I've only experienced very few of these incidents, and in all cases, my behavior was the same. I don't really care. I remembered somebody reading a 3-page note on why I was the beast of Revelation. And I sat quietly and listened because God constrained me. And when they were done, I said nothing. And then he said, well, don't you want to respond? No. God told you this, right? So why would you want to hear from me? You've already heard from God. Of course, I don't believe that. But, you know, my only question to you is, why are you here? If I found out my pastor was the beast of Revelation, whoa, I'd never come back. They left. She ended up leaving her husband, too, and moving in with a girlfriend. Gee, sometimes a man is quickly vindicated. The scenario in every one of these situations that I've had to deal with is always the same. People dripping with concern for the conditions of others will subtly mention the faults of their leaders, or they will overtly feed the anger of others who are frustrated with the leaders. Same thing that happened with Korach and Moses. Moses was not perfect. He's probably too laid back. One of the more insidious ways this takes place is prayer, interestingly enough. We need to pray for brother so-and-so because he's really having a lot of problems right now. And then they will supply all the details of those problems and all the reasons why he's so horrible and why his condition that he's in today is a result of his own fault and why he is this. And it's gossip under the guise of prayer. It's insidious. I learned a lesson within about 3 months of becoming the rabbi of Congregation Roi Israel. Before I was the rabbi, there were a couple of families, one in particular, and they would come to me almost every week, and they would complain about Eliezer Urbach, the man who founded this congregation. Eliezer's this, Eliezer's that, he's not this, he's not that, and it was just this litany of accusation, one after another. And frankly, as a young man, I didn't know how to deal with it. All right? So I'm trying to be nice, and I'm listening, and, nodding, you know, like when you listen to someone whose voice sounds like white noise, ambient sounds, and, you know, you just blink every once in a while to acknowledge their existence, but you really don't hear a word. Now, of course, my response would be, shut up. Don't speak another word. But I'm older in the Lord now and far more wise. Eventually, I got to that point, and I said, you know, okay, so I think we can establish at this point Eliezer's not perfect. Thank you, Captain Obvious. Eliezer Urbach was a great man. He was not a perfect man, but he was a great man. Eliezer led thousands to the Lord and put close to 1,000 through the mikveh. as a man, I think he's a great man and was used by God in powerful ways, but certainly not a perfect man. That is an expectation that no one can live up to. And I became the pastor. About 3 months after becoming the pastor, Eliezer comes to me, you know, there's some people who are talking. I said, people are always talking. Well, they're saying that you're not this and you're not that. And it struck the memory. And I said, Eliezer, let me guess who it is. And I named the two families. He said, how did you know? I said, because they were telling me the same thing about you 3 months ago. And it was all flattery. They were telling me how I needed to be the pastor here because Eliezer's no good, and Eliezer's not this, and Eliezer's not that, and you need to be the pastor. And Eliezer can't even sing. He's tone deaf and can't sing the Aaronic blessing. Honestly, if I'm lying, I'm dying. Like, the tune of the Aaronic blessing has any relevance to the blessing? You will pronounce these words over the children of Israel, and I will thereby put my name over the children of Israel. It's the word of God, not the tune. Flattery. Trying to build up my ego. The sin of Korach is one of the most prolific in the body of Messiah. And in these latter times, we have to guard our ears and thereby guard our hearts, minds, and souls. The delusion out there is powerful, and we have to stop it at the ear. Be very careful which words you take and lock up in your heart. If they're words of poison, they will weaken your heart. If they are words of life, your heart will rejoice. Don't believe everything you hear. In an age of delusion, it is often not true. There is one more lesson, I'll close out with this, that we can learn from the generation that died in the wilderness. Mankind, in this case Israel specifically, looks to man and to governments to save us from conditions we got ourselves into. We even look to government to solve the problems that government caused, which is a whole new level of stupid. Governments do not set people free. The very word govern means to limit. And that's why the founding fathers and reasonable people want the least amount of government that is necessary to maintain order, because more government is more restriction. You want to be set free? I got to get my Pentecostal mode. Know the truth. Truth will set you free. You got to dip. It's very difficult with a talus. It just slides off. There's only one that sets free. God set us free from Egypt. There he was called El Shaddai. When he came, walked amongst us as a man. His name was Yeshua. And he set us free. He told us the truth. And the truth was, y'all have fallen short of the glory of God, but I'm here to restore that. There's our freedom. To know that I will stand before the throne of God. My voice will join with the voices of myriad of saints that came before me and perhaps after me in praise of the living God. I am set free. There is nothing here that can torque me anymore. Because I know that truth. Understand this truth also. The government that is big enough to give you everything you want is powerful enough to take everything you got. It's an old saying, and it's just as true today as it was the very day it was penned. We appear to turn to everybody but God in times of trouble, and we need to learn Adonai Shema, God is there, and we need to actually walk and live as if we believed God is actually there. It's easy to say, it's harder to do in times of trouble. Returning to Egypt, to slavery, is never a good idea. The state is not our provider. Adonai Yireh, the Lord is our provider. In these latter times, this lesson is essential. For the movement of people these days desires government to take care of us, to supply our every need from cradle to grave. But if they get to do that, they will decide who comes out of that cradle and who goes into that grave. Careful what you ask for. You may get it. Thomas Sowell, brilliant individual, in one of his more sarcastic moments, one of the most important reasons for studying history, he's bemoaning the fact that so many politicians make statements that show a profound ignorance of history. It's simply remarkable. One of the most important reasons for studying history is that virtually every stupid idea that is in vogue today has been tried before and proved disastrous before, time and again. The Russians in our congregation look at Americans like we're loco. We're crazy. You want to go under the system that we risked our lives to get out from under? What's the matter with you? This is bad. When Marina, the lady who translates, came back from Russia after 2 years, she's wagging the finger at me and yelling at me about how Americans are crazy for wanting to go back under the very system that destroyed Russia. I have an alternative. Seek the Lord. Stand on your own 2 feet. Stop looking to others to provide for you. Stop coveting and looking to what others have and envying their condition. You have no idea of their condition. We hear it all the time. Wealthy, famous people commit suicide. Stop envying this outward appearance of people. You'll never find joy or happiness. Be joyful with what the Lord has provided for you. And do not be consumed with the delusion that is presently enveloping this earth. It is a spirit, it is evil, and it will leave you destitute and desolate. Father, in Yeshua's name, open our eyes that we might see, and our ears that we might hear. Let us see reality, Lord God, that we would know where the fight is and more, even perhaps more importantly, where it is not. That the light that you have entrusted to each of us can be exposed in the deep darkness that envelops this nation, this world, and this age. Make us speakers of truth. And let us talk to that voice that walks on the wind often. In Yeshua's precious name, amen.